You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Official U.S. policy towards African countries is ostensibly for the development and security of Africans. Some, however, do not see many benefits coming from the economic liberalization and the militarism that have characterized U.S. policy. Critics of America's African strategy believe that a new course needs to be charted. The new year and the new decade provide a great opportunity for such a change in American policy. Joining us today is Gerald Lamel. He is the Executive Director of Africa Action, the oldest American NGO to organize support for social justice in Africa. He recently wrote the organization's annual Africa Policy Outlook for the year 2010. Hello, Gerald.
Hey, how are you? How are you?
Glad you can join us again. The American government has been instrumental in creating and running a body called the Military Command for Africa, or AFRICOM. What is AFRICOM exactly?
Well, the United States has several military commands around the globe, but in the early 2000s, in the early years of the Bush administration, President Bush felt that there was a need for a joint military presence in Africa. And this was not without controversy. This was born out of, in theory, out of a the need for greater international security after the 9/11 attacks. However, you can see that the real intention of AFRICOM was to protect the U.S. access to oil. President Bush had said that we were going to need to get 75% of the oil that we were getting from the Middle East from Africa. And to date, Africa is our biggest exporter of oil to the United States. So it's very, very clear that the goal, and even the creator of the AFRICOM, James Jones, who is now the National Security Advisor to President Obama, stated very clearly that our goal is to protect our access to the oil.
Now, have there been any places in particular where AFRICOM has had an influential presence?
Well, actually, AFRICOM has grown throughout the continent. There are a number of what we're calling U.S. military satellites. These are countries like Ethiopia, for example, which has a very strong military relationship with the United States. Uganda now, Rwanda, countries like Gabon is now going in a very strong relationship. Mali, these are countries where the United States is now investing significant amount of money, in part on training of soldiers in these countries, but also in part as part of the deal to protect U.S. Access to the mineral resources and the oil that it needs. And this is very clear. One of the great causes of suspicion was the way Africa was initially rolled out. It was rolled out as almost exclusively a humanitarian exercise, when that clearly, in the face of the history of the United States and the West in Africa, was clearly a very poor way to approach this. It was completely dishonest. There are security needs throughout the continent. There is no question. But the question is, if we are motivated exclusively by protecting our economic interests, are we going to protect African people, one, and are we going to create or exacerbate situations of insecurity? Are we going to support dictators? Are we going to support the crackdown on dissent? Are we going to support the efforts of communities to have a say, particularly in countries where there are authoritarian governments that do not allow dissent? What is our relationship vis-a-vis those entities? Those questions were never answered in a serious way. And if history is a judge, then the answer is we're going to support friendly dictators and the people be damned.
Well, sounds like economics is driving the military policy. Let's talk about some of the economic relationships between the U.S. and African countries. What does the debt situation look like today?
Well, you know, the debt situation, it's really a global question. It's not exclusively a United States issue. And in fact, the United States has actually been pretty good in pushing for debt relief for some African countries. That said, the debt situation in Africa is miserable. There are African countries owe more than $300 billion, and they're servicing debt to the tune of $14 billion a year. Now, this means that this is money that's not going into education, healthcare, infrastructure, etc. In fact, African countries spend more money servicing debt than they do on things like healthcare, education, and infrastructure combined. The perhaps the most insidious part of this, though, is the fact that, one, the debt that was incurred oftentimes with full knowledge that the money being lent to these countries was not going to be used for the benefit of African people. They were lent to dictators like Mobutu, Sese Seko in Zaire, who got billions and billions of dollars. And in fact, you know, on certain occasions, American officials have admitted that we've actually deposited money in Swiss accounts for Mobutu, and now we're asking the people of the Congo, who benefited nothing from that, to pay it back. And that's extremely insidious. What is very concerning vis-a-vis the Obama administration is its wholehearted support for the utilization of the International Monetary Fund as a vehicle for helping Africa out of the global economic crisis right now. The IMF was lending money to the tune of $3 billion just in 2008. It is now up to $170 billion. Now, a lot of people may say, wow, well, that's a lot of money for Africa. They're loaning it. No, it isn't. The IMF has traditionally, its role has been to create conditions for foreign direct investment. And those conditions include eliminating labor laws, eliminating environmental laws, creating an easy facilitation of expatriating the money out of these countries. In other words, everybody benefits but African people. If you don't require that a certain number of Africans have to be hired, if you don't require that they have to have a decent wage, if you don't require that you protect the environment, if you don't require that there be some reinvestment in the countries where these businesses are reinvesting, mind you, as we do in every other country or every other state or city in the United States, if we are not asking those things, then we are not doing anything to benefit Africa. So the symbol of Africa's poverty has in large part been the IMF and the World Bank, which for 60 years have presided over policies and lent money which has benefited no one but foreign interests. And now they are being revitalized. The Asian and Latin American countries won't even deal with the IMF anymore, and yet it's being imposed on Africa. This is just simply a way of making sure that the cash cow that is Africa continues to provide, and that and entrench the misery.
Well, you have written an Outlook report for 2010. Do you see any changes coming in terms of the debt crisis in Africa?
Well, here's the bottom line. Even the Bush administration has acknowledged, and they're the first U.S. presidency to acknowledge the fact that the biggest challenge to American security is poverty. And this is true. As long as people are frustrated and poor, and they're going to fight. They're going to resist. And 2010 is different from 1960. You have more information. You have more access to things like guns. You have easier ways of getting around. the mobilizing resistance is a lot easier today than it was. It's not a question of supporting a dictator and everything's under control. It doesn't work that way anymore. You look at the Niger Delta, where 15 years ago we said, just talk to Ken Saro-Wiwa, reinvest some money, build some schools in the Niger Delta, clean up the water a little bit, and we have a deal. No one wanted to talk to him. They hung him. And the oil companies and everybody else stood by and watched. And now, what do you have? You have a quagmire there where very little is getting done. Well, if this is the way you want, if this is what you want to see 10, 20 years from now, then we can continue on the same course. If we don't, then we have to be very, very serious about addressing the issue of poverty. And this is not, you know, some sort of pie-in-the-sky bootstrap crap that we hear all the time. Well, if they had some incentive, they would go on and do it. No, 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 no. You are entrenching poverty. Our policies are entrenching poverty. We need to turn that around. And that means that some people are not going to be able to get 30%, 40% profit from their investments. But, you know, you can get 10% and then let and reinvest the rest of the money in these countries, and guess what? We'll make a huge difference. We won't have terrorism. We won't have frustration. We don't want to have poverty. We'll have a huge market for the West to barter and trade with. We'll have an economic system that's working.
You mentioned the Latin American countries have rethought their relationship with the World Bank and the IMF. Do you see any movements emerging in Africa which are, have a sort of similar character?
Well, the problem in Africa is if their major sources of income, like their oil, like their copper, like their coltan, like, you know, all the resources that are coming out of ground are being ripped out of the ground, and only a small handful of people who, you know, usually at the top of the political chain, who have facilitated deals for foreign nationals, if they're the only ones getting any money out of it, then what often happens is governments, you know, in order to pay bills, in order to pay salaries, in order to, you know, keep things from coming to a total standstill, have to borrow money. And the IMF, you know, like loan sharks, are always there with certain conditions that are going to hamstring these countries. So, you know, until, you know, when the billions of dollars in oil that's being pumped out of, say, $200 billion out of Angola is actually put back into Angola, you won't have to borrow money. With debt cancellation, the insidious debt, the debt that was incurred for the purpose of protecting foreign corporate interests as opposed to helping the people, when that is removed, then you won't have the need to take these loans at these usurious conditions. You then the IMF will become irrelevant. The Latin American and the Asian countries have done an excellent job. And you know, one of the things I need to make clear is that the leadership in Africa has been culpable in this. They, you know, all throughout the continent, throughout the history, since independence, we've seen a lot of the leaders in Africa benefit tremendously from this relationship, benefited personally from this relationship. They got houses in, you know, in Beverly Hills and in Belgium, and they got, you know, this whole lifestyle, and we've had African presidents who've lived in France for 9 months out of the year. You know, I mean, that's a joke. That would never be allowed anywhere else. We all know it. It's a joke. They are pawns for another system. So the African leadership has not made it happen. So somebody needs to speak for poor people. And if we don't start speaking louder for poor people on the continent, then we're going to have more and more problems with security. That's our argument.
Well, Gerald, thanks very much for updating us on the situation in Africa.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you guys and your support and the great work you do. So thank you.
I've been speaking with Gerald Lamel. He is the executive director of Africa Action, the oldest African social justice NGO to operate in the United States. He wrote the African Policy Outlook 2010, which was published by Foreign Policy in Focus in partnership with Africa Action. It's available online at africaaction.org.